Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Monday, September 16th. I'm Hannah Floor. Petersburg's Borough Assembly has a short agenda ahead of today's meeting with only two items of business. Borough Clerk Debbie Thompson is asking the Assembly to approve 12 willing residents to serve as election officials for the October 1st municipal election. The Assembly is also asked to choose a date to certify the results of the election, which has to happen no later than October 8th. And Petersburg Utility Director Carl Hagerman will report on the financial aspects of a ballot measure to improve local water and wastewater infrastructure. In the upcoming municipal election, Petersburg voters will decide on ballot measure 4, which proposes to borrow almost $20 million for the improvements. That money would come from a low-interest loan from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. And local water and wastewater customers would pay off the loan over the next 20 years with their monthly utility bills. Petersburg's Borough Assembly will meet tonight at 6 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers of the Municipal Building. KFSK will broadcast the meeting live and post the recording on our website, kfsk.org. Also stay tuned for Borough Business. That's a call-in show with borough officials today at 12:30, right after Midday Magazine. If you have questions for today's guests, the number to call is 907-772-3808. The Tongass National Forest has a new online tool for subsistence users in Southeast Alaska. They call it the Subsistence Dashboard. Right now, it includes data on sockeye fisheries monitoring, as well as wildlife regulatory changes and boundaries. There are live maps to help harvesters better navigate current regulations. Robert Cross is the Subsistence Program Manager for the Tongass National Forest. He talked with Coast Alaska's Angela Denning about the new online dashboard, which he says was created by popular demand.
It was developed in response to some feedback that we've gotten from tribal organizations and subsistence users just all across Southeast Alaska. Basically just related to the desire for better access to data and regulatory maps.
Can you give an example of how like a subsistence user would use the dashboard?
Yeah, so one good example I think would be like the Readout Lake project. That's one of our pilot projects where we actually provide daily updates of the sockeye escapement. And so somebody in Sitka can look at those daily updates and sort of make decisions about economy of effort and fuel to travel all the way out to Readout Lake and decide whether or not that's worth their time. So, you know, nobody wants to go fish somewhere if there's no fish in the river. And we happen to have a weir there and we have that information and can provide that to the public to be able to make those decisions about, you know, if it's worth taking the day off and spending gas money to get out there to go fishing.
When I did look at the dashboard, there was the map of sockeye fishing, and it looked like there were over a dozen sites where people are known to subsistence fish.
Yeah, and there's a lot more than that. It's the interactive map that we have on the sockeye page of the dashboard shows all of our current and past fisheries resource monitoring program sites, so places where the Forest Service has funded a sockeye weir. So the ones that you can see on the interactive map, those are the sites where we've had weirs or we currently have weirs. And so now with this dashboard, we can provide the current and historic escapement and harvest information to folks. And all of this is already information that exists. It's just sort of dispersed amongst publications and written reports and things like that. So we're really... one of the reasons for this dashboard is to consolidate all that information and make it a lot more accessible to people to be able to make those decisions, but also be able to check on a sockeye site that's really important to them and see what the health of the run is this year compared to, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
I also noticed there were deer and moose on the dashboard. How might that help hunters?
Yeah, so there's three different pages that are associated with wildlife. We have the special actions page for mountain goat and moose. We also have the deer harvest page, which is a visual representation on a live map that shows the game management unit 2 or the Prince of Wales area, shows all the different regulations based on land ownership and rural determination and things like that. And then we also have a set of offline maps that work with the Avenza app. And so harvesters can go online and download a map onto their phone, and then they can see where they're at when they're in the woods offline. They can see where they're at in reference to regulatory boundary markers. And so an example of how that would be helpful is that the in-season management page shows any current in-season management actions that are currently out for moose or mountain goats. So like Unit 4, Baranoff Island, goats would be a really good example. It's split up into all these different goat harvest zones based on watersheds. And then those zones have individual quotas for the number of males or females that can be harvested within that zone. And when the quota is met, then that zone gets closed through an in-season management action. And so with this dashboard, harvesters can go online, they can see which zones are open, which ones are closed, and they can even see how much of the quota is remaining in that zone. So if you're planning on going and hunting the Lucky Chance zone and with two people and there's only one billy left on the quota, then you might use that information to decide to go to a different hunting zone.
All right. Well, thank you so much for explaining the Subsistence Dashboard. Is there anything that you wanted to add?
We're really excited about it. We're also open to developing new aspects of the dashboard. So this is our first release of it. But if there's information that other folks would like to see put onto this dashboard, then that's something that they can reach out to myself or my staff about. And we're happy to try to incorporate that into this.
That was Coast Alaska's Angela Denning speaking with Robert Cross, the Subsistence Program Manager for the Tongass National Forest. Repairs have been made to the broken subsea fiber optic cable that took Sitka offline over 2 weeks ago, but it could be several days until cellular service and internet access are totally restored. In an email Friday, GCI spokesperson Josh Edge told KCAW that the British-flagged repair ship, the Cable Innovator, successfully completed splicing work on the damaged cable Friday morning. Once they finish testing the cable, the ship will position the repaired segment back on the seafloor, and GCI will begin the process of getting Sitka back online. Right now, GCI is using a backup system, a combination of satellite and microwave technology, to provide basic internet and texting, though Sitkans have reported varied access to those services, from spotty to non-existent, often depending on the cell provider and location. The company's statement on Friday warned that the process of shifting Sitka's internet back to fiber optic is complicated and could take several days to fully restore service. Sitka has been offline since the cable between Sitka and Angoon broke on August 29th. Repairs were delayed slightly last Wednesday due to high winds. The last time a fiber optic cable broke, in 2016, Sitka was offline for 12 days. In the first few weeks of the outage, many Sitkans felt the frustration of being unable to communicate, whether it was a postponed surgical procedure that required telemedicine or just setting up a carpool for their child. But something else happened too, and it wasn't simply nostalgia for the days when the entire world wasn't a click away. Robert Woolsey spoke with a clinical mental health counselor to learn more about the unexpected upside of being out of touch.
I went to see Melissa Marconi-Wenzel in her office to learn more about people's struggles as they coped without the internet. Marconi-Wenzel, though, had a different take.
Some people have never felt more like they're living on an island than they are right now.
We're more free. You know, I had expected there to be more of that kind of internet withdrawal, the kind of stereotypical withdrawal from being constantly connected. But I actually didn't really see that, which was a surprise to me. So from my little corner of the world, my practice, you know, my friends and colleagues and acquaintances, what I really noticed was a general, you know, a slow, well, actually not that slow, transition into a sense of relief more so than anything.
A sense of relief. I know I felt it, especially once we learned that the outage was limited in scope and would be of relatively short duration. I didn't really mention it to anyone, since Sitka was already becoming a town of haves and have-nots, those who have Starlink and those who have not. But texting and cell phones, even landlines, were unreliable for a few days, with or without Starlink. Marconi Wenzel says being unreachable was a welcome surprise.
What I kept hearing from adult clients and adults in my life was this sense of, this is like a snow day for us. Suddenly we feel relief from this pressure of being constantly connected, and it feels good. And even among the adolescents and the children with whom I work, there was more appreciation for this experience than stress around it.
So now what? A cable-laying ship is not far from Sitka, repairing our fiber optic link to the rest of the world. Is everything going to go back to the way it was? Or will people live more intentionally now after participating in an unintended social experiment? Marconi Wenzel says we don't have to go back.
This experience held up a mirror to our faces so that we gained insight into just how tied we feel to technology and how exhausting and stressful that is in our daily lives. And the less we had of it, the more people were starting to reconnect with other people, their families, their friends, pick up old, enjoyable activities like playing the guitar, playing family games. And they realize, I feel more alive. I feel more connected. In a sense, I feel more human. And so then the question becomes, is this is something you value? How do you bring more of that back into your life once we're reconnected to the internet? And those are the conversations I'm having with people.
An important distinction is that out of touch is not necessarily isolated. The act of seeking out an available Wi-Fi signal from someplace like Sitka's public library actually brings people together. So does dropping by a neighbor's house to download a movie. This is a lot different from the COVID pandemic, which split communities. Marconi Wenzel is overwhelmed by the generosity she's seen and the grace she's experienced from people whose lives have been turned upside down, just like hers.
I'm just sort of buoyed by the humanity that this has brought out in everybody.
Melissa Marconi Wenzel is a clinical mental health counselor. Sitka lost internet as well as most telecommunications on August 29th when the fiber optic cable serving the community failed. Limited service was restored by September 8th. And full service could resume within a few days. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Members of Ketchikan's American Legion chapter stood around the site of their former building last week, exactly 1 year after the historic building burned down. The group began by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. They faced the flagpole at the front of the cleared lot. Only part of the structure is still standing. Rob Fullerton led the gathering and said afterwards that they wanted to take a moment to reflect on the past year.
Memorialize the year it's been and recognize our loss and trying to fortify for the next year and get the building back up.
The Pose 3 building was nearly 100 years old when it was destroyed last year in an alleged arson fire. The man charged in the incident is currently awaiting trial. The veterans group immediately started planning to rebuild and has been working to raise the $1.2 million they estimate it will cost. They suffered a setback in late June when Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed funding what would have covered about half of their construction expenses. But the Legionnaires have pressed on and are now aiming to break ground next spring. Joe Sullivan heads up the building committee and says they're currently finalizing the floor plans.
Our floor plans have been sent to the architects and engineers for final drawings, and we're working on pinning down which contractors to use.
Pose 3 continues to fundraise for the rebuild. They have an ongoing raffle, a buy a brick project, a GoFundMe account, and an off-road cart tour fundraiser coming up this weekend. The Ketchikan School District received a complaint last Thursday of sexual assault by a guest instructor. According to the district, the person who allegedly committed the assault had taught at Ketchikan High School. District officials say they've ensured the instructor won't return to any district school until the police department completes an investigation. Anyone with information that may be relevant to that investigation is encouraged to contact the Ketchikan Police Department. For KFSK, I'm Hannah Floor.